Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I am wonderful. I was just on Wine and Crime, the podcast. It's a comedy-style true crime podcast, so lots of profanity, lots of crass language. So wear headphones when you listen, but check it out. It's the Double Lives episode.
Are you following us on Twitter? It's at GenYPod. You can tweet at us after the episode. This is kind of a heavy episode here.
This is an episode that I don't even remember when I suggested it. It was probably years ago, and we felt that this was a better time to cover this topic. Hey, I want to tell you about Stitcher Premium. You can go listen to our back catalog and new episodes of the show, all completely ad-free, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of your other favorite podcasts. You can sign up now for a free month at Stitcher Premium by going to stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and using the promo code Wondery. Once you're signed up, just download the Stitcher app for iOS or Android and start listening. That's stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and promo code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of Emmett Till in 1955. And this is a murder that would really define, I think, what we were as a country back then and probably affected where we went from there.
So it's a very important historical document of our country.
Emmett Till's murder occurred on August 28th, 1955. Emmett Till was 14 years old at the time. Before we get to the murder, though, I really want to set up where Emmett Till came from and talk more about his family. Emmett Till's mother was Mamie Elizabeth Carthen. She was born on November 23rd, 1921, near Webb, Mississippi. Her father, John, left to start work in Argo, Illinois, which was outside of Chicago, at the Argo Corn Products Refining Company. And in January of 1924, she and her mother, Alma, joined her father in Argo. Each summer, Mamie returned to Mississippi to visit relatives there. When she was 13, her parents divorced. And you know how it works. After someone's parents divorce, sometimes it has kind of a devastating effect on them because their whole world is torn apart. But for Mamie, the way she dealt with it was she just buried herself in her studies. In 1940, she graduated from Argo Community High School and was the first black student to make the honor roll and the fourth to graduate at all. And some context here, just in case it's not obvious, but if you were a black student back then, well, you weren't exactly welcome. And so education wasn't very easy to come by. And so this is obviously a unique student.
For her to get so far ahead of the game is, it just shows her dedication to herself, and later on you'll see it for her family.
Mamie met Lewis Till the year she graduated, and he came from Missouri. He was working at the Argo Corn Company. It was said that he was very popular with the ladies, but he had his eye on Mamie, and, well, he wanted her to marry him, and her parents didn't like that idea, but he did win her over, and on October 14th, 1940, they got married at age 18.
Emmett Lewis Till was born July 25th, 1941, in Chicago. His nickname was Bobo. In 1942, his mother and father would separate, and in 1943, Lewis was drafted into the U.S. Army, and he went to Europe to fight. And in 1945, Mamie got a letter from the Department of Defense that informed her that Lewis had died for willful misconduct. It means that he was punished by the military and executed for his crimes, but she wasn't informed what he had done, what had gone down, nothing like that. So that was on July 2nd, 1945. She received his ring. It was inscribed with the initials LT for Lewis Till, and she would eventually give this to her son, Emmett. Her and Emmett moved to Chicago's South Side. She worked as a civil service employee. When Emmett was five, he got polio, but he recovered. I guess he had a mild lisp or just a mild speech impediment. His mother married Jean Pink Bradley, but then they ended up getting a divorce a few years later. This is Emmett's childhood for the most part. They had a lot of family and cousins and uncles that were in Mississippi. It was August 1955 when Till's great uncle, Moses Wright, had visited the family in Chicago. He'd come all the way up from Mississippi. and he was planning to take Till's cousin, Wheeler Parker, back home, visit the families and the relatives. And Till wanted to go visit all of his cousins and see his family. And he begged his mother to let him go. But his mother didn't want him there. And instead, she offered to take him driving. She was going to go on a road trip to Omaha, Nebraska. But Till was not having any of it. He's like, I want to go and I want to visit my family. So she made that decision to let him go and go visit Mississippi that August.
It's on August 24th, 1955, when Emmett went to Bryant's Grocery and Meat Market with a group of other teenagers. They consisted of seven boys and a girl. Some of them were his relatives and some were just friends. They wanted to get some refreshments. It had been a long day. They had actually been picking cotton. They went to the store in groups of one or two. When Emmett went in, he bought 2 cents worth of bubblegum. Now, this is where things take a turn, because depending on who's telling the story, Emmett either flirted with, whistled at, or touched the hand or waist of the shop owner, Carolyn Bryant.
She was 21 years old at the time.
Some have said that some of the other kids had dared him to do something, to say something, or do something to Carolyn. And some said that he just was kind of forward. But whatever happened, Carolyn stormed out of the store, and the kids who were outside said she was going to get a pistol, so all these teenagers quickly left.
It's said that Emmett was a very outgoing kid, always joking, always playing around, so very positive and outgoing. And I guess maybe that personality wasn't very welcome where he was at.
Carolyn went to the back of the store. Her sister-in-law, Juanita, was there, taking care of the children. She spoke with her about what had happened, and they agreed not to tell their husbands. And by husbands, meaning Carolyn's husband, Roy, and Juanita's husband, JW. Well, they were away on a trucking job. When the men got home, one of the children may have told them what had happened, or one of the store's employees. So Roy and JW decided to go and talk with Emmett because he needed to be taught a lesson.
This is 4 days later after the incident, and Emmett is staying at his cousin's house, not thinking anything of it.
Emmett and his cousins didn't tell Moses about what had happened because they feared that Moses would have Emmett sent back home. After a few quiet days, they thought everything was fine. But as we know, 4 days later, Roy and JW went to visit Moses, and they banged on the door until it was answered. And when Moses opened the door, they were demanding that the boy that did the talking be brought out.
This is 2:30 a.m. in the morning that they're banging on a door and demanding for Emmett to be brought out to them. I mean, this isn't the middle of the day. This isn't, hey, there was a little problem the other day and we just want to talk. No, this is men showing up in the middle of the night with guns and demanding to talk to a child.
Now, Moses and his wife did their best to try and dissuade the men, to try and ask them to leave. Moses said, please don't take the boy. And Elizabeth offered them money. But they worked their way into the home. They found Emmett asleep in one of the beds. They said, get dressed. And they threatened Moses as they were leaving to not make any trouble.
Now, he was in the bed with Simon Wright, Moses' son. So Moses doesn't want to do anything because his son is right there. And he does care about Emmett very much, but he's outnumbered. And he's a black man living in the South in 1955. He knows the deck is stacked against him.
When Roy and JW leave, they bring Emmett to a shed or a barn on the property owned by someone in JW's family. This is where they beat him. And then they take him to the banks of the Tallahatchie River. Now, what they do exactly in what order, I don't know. But it was described as his head was bashed in. He was shot in the head as well. One of his eyes was gouged out. And then he had a 75-pound metal gin fan, that's a cotton gin fan, tied around his neck with barbed wire. And then they tossed him in the river, which is a brutal murder.
14-year-old child, middle of the night. I don't know how this could be justified in any way, shape, form. Doesn't matter. Even if he had said something to Carol, even if he had been rude, this reaction, this response, I can't imagine anyone, at least in today's world, justifying it. But we'll see how society responds to it in 1955.
Moses and Elizabeth sent word to Mamie in Chicago telling her that her son had been kidnapped, and a local sheriff was involved. He and the family searched for Emmett along rivers and under bridges. Moses later said, "Where black folks always look when something like this happens," meaning this isn't something that happened one time. This is something that happens a lot.
Nothing new.
On August 29th, 1955, Roy and J.W. were arrested on charges of kidnapping. They were sent to the jail in Greenwood, Mississippi. That's about 10 miles south of Money, where this happened. They were held without bond. So far, it looks like justice is coming, right?
Yeah. They actually arrested them. This is a step in the right direction, right?
A little bit of hope here. Both men admitted that they had kidnapped Emmett, but they said they had let him go alive.
Pretty much, we scared him, we talked to him, and then we let him go. Well, you're the last people to be seen with the child after you pretty much did a home invasion in the middle of the night. So, yeah, you're the suspect here.
Sad news arrived on August 31st, 1955, when the decomposing body of Emmett Till was pulled from the Tallahatchie River. Fishermen had found him. The gin fan and barbed wire were still wrapped around his neck. His face was so swollen that a facial ID was impossible. Moses was able to identify Emmett based on the LT signet ring on his finger.
So that ring that his mother got from his father after he was executed in the army is the only thing that they can use to identify Emmett with, but that's all they need. There's a boy that's gone missing. There's two men that say that they kidnapped him and let him go, and then they end up finding his body in a river wearing the same ring. It doesn't take a rocket scientist or an investigator to figure this one out.
Local authorities wanted to bury Emmett, but his mother, Mamie, insisted that his body be sent to Chicago. His body actually takes a bit of a journey here, but September 2nd, 1955, Emmett's casket arrived at the Illinois Central Terminal in Chicago. Mamie, overcome with grief at the sight of her son's casket, and she cried out, "Lord, take my soul." And the press captured a photo of her at that moment. After Emmett was taken to A.A. Rayner and Son's funeral home, the press couldn't agree if Emmett's death was a lynching. So this story is circulating, and people are arguing about how he died, what had happened to him.
The definition of a lynching is a group or mob kill someone, especially by hanging, for an alleged offense with or without a legal trial. Think this falls in line with lynching. Two people is more than one, and there is an alleged offense and no trial. But lynching has this negative connotation. And even back then, they're like, "Oh, we can't say that. No, we got to act like we're more civilized these days. This was just a heinous murder. It's not a lynching."
Well, some in the press knew what had happened because a paper in Belgium had an article entitled Racism in the USA, A Young Black is Lynched in Mississippi.
That's a pretty accurate headline. I wish they would do that more often.
September 3rd, 1955, Emmett's funeral was held at Roberts Temple Church of God in Chicago.
Now, something different about this funeral happens, right, Aaron?
The death of a child is something that no parent can even conceive of. And those that have had that happen to them, their grief must be overwhelming. But we already talked about how Mamie was highly educated, very smart. Something that she decided to do is something I don't think most people could have done, but she wanted to have an open casket so that the world would see what she had to see, which was her son's brutally beaten body.
There's pictures of this out there. It's horrific, but if she hadn't have done this, do you think this story would be talked about today? Do you think that anyone would have even had a second thought about what had happened here?
No, so often it seems like those who do wrong want to sweep it under a rug. But Mamie saw to it that this wasn't going to get swept under a rug. By having that open casket, and in fact, Jet Magazine took pictures and featured it in their magazine, the world started to see what she saw, just as she intended. And it horrified people. When they look at the picture of Emmett Till in his casket, I mean, even to this day, there are people that say, that's not a 14-year-old. They lied. Really? Because this was the result of a child being beaten, shot, and brutalized, and then thrown in the water and being left in the water for days. That's what this is. This is definitely the body of a child.
She wanted to show the world this horrific thing so they would A, believe it, and B, maybe, possibly, care and do something about it. And fast forward to today's time, somebody live streaming on Facebook their husband or their boyfriend who's just been shot and killed in their car. People can say that's very disgusting to do. People can disagree with the action. But how else are we supposed to show the world what this looks like? And even in 1955, his mother knew what she had to do.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
They said about 50,000 people waited in line to see Emmett's body. On September 6, 1955, Emmett Till was buried at Burr Oak Cemetery in Chicago. That same day, Roy Bryant and J.W. Malone are indicted by a grand jury for murder. Now, both these men pleaded innocent, and they were held until the start of the trial. It's September 15, 1955, when Jet Magazine published photographs of Emmett's beaten body.
We already know what happened. We already know that this child was murdered, brutalized, tortured, and then his tortured, bloated body is on display for all to see before the trial. You would think that this would have an impact.
And it did in a way, because there was a rallying cry over the death of Emmett Till. Black newspapers, black magazines, people were outraged. There was this sense that this wasn't going to happen again. People were upset.
As they should be.
So the trial took place at a courthouse in Sumner, Mississippi. A lot of the white people in the town didn't like all this attention. There was a lot of support for Roy and JW. They were standing up for their own, I guess.
Yeah, and they flooded the courtroom and took up all the seats to prevent any of the black families or people to come in and watch the trial.
Now, Roy and JW, they can't really mount a good defense with the kind of money they have, but five different local lawyers offered their services pro bono, and more than $10,000 was donated to their defense. Most of it came from local businessmen.
I think of another situation that happened in modern times where the guy couldn't afford a defense attorney and got almost $500,000 in donations, and George Zimmerman was able to mount a defense.
September 19th, 1955 was when Emmett's murder trial began. The jury was made up of 12 white men, and that's because black people and white women were not allowed to be on the jury.
I don't think that's very representative of your peers. And we still see this today with the ability to strike jurors from jury boxes.
1955, just in case we've forgotten.
There were 9 farmers, 2 carpenters, and 1 insurance agent. They were sequestered to the upper floor of a local hotel. And on September 19th, Mamie traveled from Chicago down to Mississippi to attend the trial. September 20th, court was recessed in order for additional witnesses. Local law enforcement, the NAACP, and black and white reporters all got together and found the sharecropper who saw JW's truck and heard Emmett being beaten that night. So a lot of people came together to find an eyewitness here.
The local sharecropper, his name was Willie Reed, he testified that he heard the sounds of a beating coming from the Milam family shed on the night of the murder. JW came out of the shed carrying a .45 caliber pistol on his hip. And when JW asked if he'd heard anything, Willie told him no.
I mean, that's the typical thing. You know, you do a crime in front of somebody and then you turn and look at him and said, did you see or hear anything? And of course, they're going to say no because you're holding a gun.
Another key moment happened on September 21st when Moses stood up in court and pointed his finger at the two men who were responsible. He pointed his finger at both Roy and JW and accused them of coming into his home and taking Emmett at gunpoint. Now, this is something that was unheard of at the time.
Yeah, a black person accusing a white person of pretty much anything, that doesn't happen. This put a target on Moses. For him to do this, he literally signed his own death certificate, but he did it anyways because he knew it was what was right.
Carolyn Bryant, who was the woman who supposedly was whistled at by Emmett or touched by Emmett, testified, but not in front of the jury. The judge said that her testimony was not applicable to the case, but needed to be taken because there might be possible appeals in this case. She's
so for the record, essentially.
Exactly. She said that Emmett came into her store and bought 2 cents worth of bubblegum. She said he then grabbed her and verbally threatened her. She said he had, and there's some unprintable word here, with white women before. He then whistled at her as he left. She said, "I was just scared to death." Neither Roy nor JW took the stand. The defense team argued that the body pulled from the river was not that of Emmett Till. They said that the NAACP had planted that body there and that Emmett was actually alive and well, but in hiding.
Oh.
And in closing arguments, they said to the jury, "Your ancestors will turn over in their graves, and I'm sure every last Anglo-Saxon one of you has the courage to free these men."
This is insane. There's a huge conspiracy that this boy wasn't murdered. They just found some other random body, and he's living it up back in Chicago, all just to frame these two white men. What? When it comes back to, oh, he whistled, or he touched her hand, or he doesn't look like he's 14. Yeah, I hear those same things in today's media and newspapers. Well, he doesn't look like a young kid. He looks older. He had some things in his backpack that are questionable, or he bought Skittles and a drink from a convenience store that combined can create some sort of drug. They look older and they're threatening. I mean, this is all very familiar to me, and it's sad because now it's just accepted propaganda as opposed to blatant propaganda, which it was then.
I mean, it made no sense, though. White people were in power. Black people were even afraid to testify in court in any case. So how would there be a conspiracy against two white men?
I know. It's just so outlandish.
You know what it is? It's sort of like they know they can say and do whatever they want because they're going to get their way. And sure enough, September 23rd, 1955, the jury deliberated for about 67 minutes. And one of them remarked that it wouldn't have taken so long, except that they had stopped to drink soda pop. And some reporters even reported hearing laughter from the room.
Because, you know, oh, well, we figured this out real quick, but we wanted to drink our soda in the meantime.
Roy Bryant and J.W. Malam were found not guilty of murdering Emmett Till. And after the trial, they posed for photographs while smoking cigars and kissing their wives. They were celebrating. That same day, Moses and Willie Reed were taken to Chicago, where Willie collapsed and had a nervous breakdown. I mean, basically fleeing for their lives.
Now, I want to pause for 1 second here because anyone that's a Patreon supporter knows that we've done a episode on jury nullification, something that I very much believe in, but this right here, this is the dark side of that. Finding somebody not guilty who you know absolutely did the crime is within a jury's power, but when you have a jury that's completely racist and wouldn't value the human life of a black child over two white men, well, this is the exact argument against jury nullification right here, incarnate.
Newspapers in Europe were very loud about the verdict, it seems. One had a headline, "Killing a black person isn't a crime in the home of the Yankees. The white killers of young Emmett Till are acquitted." Another one said, "The scandalous acquittal in Sumner." And yet another, which was in Germany, said, "The life of a Negro isn't worth a whistle," which, of course, is kind of a callback to Emmett's supposed whistle that he had as part of his lisp. On September 30th, 1955, Roy and JW were released on bond while kidnapping charges were pending. And October 15th, 1955, an article was published by the Memphis Commercial Appeal after information about Lewis Till's death was leaked by Mississippi Senator James O. Eastland. Now, let's talk about this because we had already said that Lewis Till, Emmett's dad, was executed by the military. let's talk about why, because this was leaked. These are supposed to be sealed records, but someone leaked them after the trial. What did they say?
Yeah. Just to emphasize, not even the Till family was privy to this information until it was made public. It said that Lewis Till and another soldier had raped multiple women and murdered one Italian woman. And they were charged with these rapes and the killing of the third. And they were both hanged for it.
Of course, this is saying, oh, well, Emmett Till was Lewis Till's son. He's not great either.
Yeah, this monstrous kid came from a monstrous father. So he deserved it. We made the right choice here. This is the whole slandering. This is the character assassination. You know, first it's, that's not even a boy. Then it's, oh, this is a whole conspiracy. That's not even the right body. And, well, his father was a monster too.
A grand jury was composed on November 9th, 1955. This was in relation to the kidnapping charges. So this is interesting because they beat the rap for the murder, but now they're up for kidnapping charges.
Well, they had admitted to taking Emmett that night to the police, but then they let him go, quote unquote.
So, this should be easy.
Yeah, it's done deal.
Slam dunk.
Yeah, you have a confession, right?
Well, Moses and Willie both return to Mississippi. They're going to testify, but the grand jury decides not to indict. So once again, Roy and JW are free, and Moses and Willie have to go back to Chicago, and this time, never to return.
So you can indict a ham sandwich. You have two white men who literally admitted to kidnapping a child in the middle of the night who can't even be indicted. Probably because, one, no one cares what they did because the value of a white human life is greater than a black human life. Secondly, they probably think the kid deserved it. And thirdly, maybe some of them are like, we don't even know if that was the right kid. We don't even know. It could have been a switcheroo on us because they're just so stupid. I don't know. But they don't indict him. They get to walk free. You have this thing called double jeopardy, so they can't be recharged. You have Roy and JW walking around as free men.
And talking. Because in January of 1956, both men talked freely to a reporter for a magazine, it was Look magazine, about how they killed Emmett. And they both knew that they were protected under double jeopardy law. Roy said that Carolyn had not been part of or present for the kidnapping or murder, which is weird because it was said that there was a female voice heard in the car. Well, it was Moses who had heard that, right? When Emmett was taken to the car, he overheard one of the men ask, "Is this him?" And there was a lighter voice who confirmed that, yes, it was him. So it seems likely that she was present in the car.
But they got to protect her because she doesn't have double jeopardy. She's never been charged. So she could still face accessory or something to that effect. But they say she wasn't around. She wasn't privy to it.
So sure, they're protected by double jeopardy. They can say how they murdered this boy. They got away with it. Roy owned a store. Remember, Carolyn was working in the shop that they owned when this all went down. Originally. Well, who makes up most of the people who go into that store?
Their neighbors and all the people that live in town who were supporting them for the most part because the court system worked and they were found not guilty. So these are okay gentlemen and we can support them. And they got it wrong. They got the wrong guys. But now there's this whole spread in Look magazine, where they brag about murdering and torturing this young boy. So
the people who supported them are now very uncomfortable, and they no longer feel like patronizing the store.
I wouldn't.
Now, it wasn't just white people who stopped shopping at these grocery stores. It was also the black people in the communities around money. The stores went out of business, and JW and Roy had a hard time finding work. They had a hard time finding anywhere to live.
they were being ostracized. So even though there was no justice in the court of law, well, they were finding that the public was starting to turn their backs on them, despite the early support.
This is where, if I were to ever support a social justice movement, if I were to ever support a public shaming, this is it right here. They deserve to go under. They're admitting to this. When I read the Look magazine story, I couldn't tell if it was trying to be favorable towards them or slandering them. I couldn't tell. It was just a very matter-of-fact story. But if you read some of the comments, or literally letters that you would have to write in back then, people were upset. And depending on what your skin color was or what state you lived in, they were either upset because they felt Look was not portraying these two men in a good enough light, or they were upset because they gave them a platform where they got to literally brag about lynching a black child.
Mamie began a lifetime of advocacy. She started with the federal government. She wanted to know why she couldn't get justice for her son's murder. She tried to meet with President Dwight Eisenhower, who refused the meeting. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover wrote an internal memo that said, "There has been no allegation made that the victim," meaning Emmett Till, "has been subjected to the deprivation of any right or privilege which is secured and protected by the Constitution and the laws of the United States." Mamie was speaking to crowds, which were numbering in the tens of thousands around the country. Again, this was a rallying cry. And the civil rights movement started moving to the front lines. Rosa Parks, December 1955, she was told to sit in the back of the bus, and when she refused to do so, apparently she had Emmett Till on her mind.
Yeah.
Like, no more.
Yeah. We're sick and tired of this. It's one of those things where even when you listen to some of the soldiers that were either in the Korean War or Vietnam, a lot of the black soldiers will say, "I liked it better over there because I was at least equal." When you're in the firefight, no one cares about what race you are. And it wasn't until they came back home, where they're having to literally fight for their rights, that they were just told they were fighting for in a foreign land. And then you have Rosa Parks, and you have the younger generation growing up and saying, "Why are we treated this way?" And you have the photo of Emmett Till out there. And then you have all the slander, all the propaganda trying to tear this black family down because their son was victimized. You want justice. You want change.
Mamie graduated cum laude from Chicago Teachers College in 56. And in 75, she graduated with a master's degree in administration and supervision from Loyola University in Chicago. She went on to teach special education in Chicago elementary schools. But this whole time, she was continuing to let the world know what had happened to her son.
And thank God she did. Thank God she had the awareness at the time to have the open casket funeral. Because as we know, there's still Holocaust deniers today. There's people that say pics or it didn't happen. And in this case, she had to prove what happened to her son over and over and over again. Even 5 decades later, Moses Wright would end up donating DNA to prove that Emmett was the one. Even 50 years later, they're still having to combat allegations that this wasn't even Emmett's body.
Yeah, this false narrative.
As we see, a lot of the other newspapers that aren't in America, or at least even some of the newspapers that are in the northern states, are saying, "No, this is screwed up. We need to talk about this. We need to address this." But for the most part, you know, when these guys were dumb enough to go, or arrogant enough to go confess all of their horribleness to that magazine, well, luckily, people actually started listening and realize the truth of the matter. Luckily, we have Emmett Till's mother, who kept talking would not be silenced.
Mamie went on to write a book titled Death of Innocence with Christopher Benson. It was about Emmett's life and death. And in it, she said something about her son and his lisp and how he would stammer sometimes and would whistle to help get the words out. So there's always this possibility that Carolyn Bryant heard him whistle and overreacted. But as we know, her actions led to his murder.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
In May 2004, the Department of Justice and the Mississippi District Attorney's Office opened an investigation into Emmett's murder. They wanted to know if there were any prosecutions possible for other individuals involved in the crime. Now, this is good because it shows that at least some aspect of the government wants to see justice. They would have to be prosecuted under state law because the federal statute of limitations was long gone. In spring 2005, Emmett Till's body was exhumed. An autopsy was performed, and in June of that year, it was reported that the body had been positively identified as Emmett Till through DNA. Just in case anybody wondered.
Yeah, they still have to prove this stuff. In July 2005, the New York Times published an article called The Ghosts of Emmett Till, and it revolved around interviews that took place in 1995. A man named Ray Tribble, who was the youngest jury member, said that he voted to acquit, and his reasons were the defense's argument that the body in the river didn't belong to Emmett Till. He believed this because there was hair on the chest, which he said, blacks don't grow hair on their chest until they're 30. The ignorance of this, just the downright stupidity of some of these statements is just mind-blowing to me. The defense attorney said, my clients, they denied that they did it. Yeah, I believed them, which he's a defense attorney. He's paid to defend. So whatever about that guy. But this is why they had to go back 50 years later, prove by DNA that this was actually Emmett. Because people, even in the 1990s, were saying, who knows? I don't know if it was that kid or not. You have to counter this horrible racist narrative. It's like countering the Holocaust. You know, Holocaust deniers saying it never happened. It's like, but we have all this documentation. We have all the evidence. Emmett Till was killed, murdered by these two men. They've confessed to it, yet even later, people are saying, I don't know if that was his body or not. I just don't get it.
In 2006, Jerome Little, who was the first black president of the Tallahatchie County Board of Supervisors, organized the Emmett Till Memorial Commission. It was founded to properly remember and honor Emmett. In 2007, they offered a formal apology to the Till family in a public ceremony. I think this is, once again, someone in the government trying to set things right as best they could with what little power they have. In early 2007, the district attorney in LaFleur County attempted to bring charges of manslaughter against Carolyn Bryant. This was in relation to Moses' testimony that he heard another lighter voice on the night that Emmett was kidnapped. This voice positively identified Emmett. Remember, someone in that car was asked, is this him? And a lighter voice responded that it was. Now, it's long been believed that this voice belonged to Carolyn Bryant because she was the only one in the store, aside from the teenagers. The grand jury didn't indict her on these charges, and this brought an end to this 3-year federal investigation into the murder of Emmett Till. So, of course, many people were angry because this was one more chance to see someone brought to justice for what they did. District Attorney Joyce Chiles, who was black, said, "It would have been very easy for the grand jury to have returned a true bill based solely on emotion and the rage they felt, and I commend them for not doing that." In other words, she believes that they, in good faith, came to that decision.
They didn't have enough evidence. There wasn't enough probable cause to make this indictment.
And it makes sense. You can say who else could have positively identified him, but no one saw the face of the person in the car. At least no one who would have made a good witness, because the white men there, they sure weren't going to say anything. In January of 2010, Simeon Wright, who is Moses' son, Emmett's cousin, published a book titled Simeon's Story, an eyewitness account of the kidnapping of Emmett Till. Now, this book's interesting because it works to dispel the rumors and incorrect stories about Emmett Till's death. One of the stories was that Emmett had a photo of a white girl in his wallet. They said that wasn't true. They also said that he was never dared by any of the boys to flirt with Carolyn, and he did not speak ugly remarks to her, as she had claimed during the trial. They also went on to say that he was not castrated or tortured with a drill bit. Again, what happened to him was horrifying enough. These other things were just really insult to injury for anyone who loved Emmett or cared about his story.
There was even another rumor that was spread that he was killed by a black man, and that's why they were framing it on these two white men. So he counters that also.
Now, Simeon does say in the book that Emmett did whistle at Carolyn from near the outside doorway of the grocery, but he thinks it was just a joke. One thing that was said about Emmett was he was very, very humorous. He loved to make jokes. There's something else I want to say about Emmett, because we didn't really cover what his life was like back in Chicago, but since his mother worked so much, she worked 12-hour days much of the time, Emmett told her, "You go make the money, I'll take care of the house." And so he did all the laundry and the cleaning, a very responsible 14-year-old.
In August of 2009, Emmett's family donated the original casket to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. When Emmett's body was exhumed in 2005, he was put in a new casket for reburial. And the family made the decision to donate the casket before to make sure that it was preserved. Again, it's just one more piece of evidence that they want to put out there. The museum said that it would work hard to show respect to this very important piece of history.
In 2016, John Edgar Wideman, who was an author and researcher, published his book titled Writing to Save a Life, The Lewis Till File. Now remember, Lewis Till, Emmett's father, was executed in 1945 because they said he had raped two women and murdered a third. Well, John Edgar was looking through the files, and according to him, there isn't enough to support a guilty verdict in Lewis Till's case. So it's very questionable. Once again, we're looking at what might be racism run amok. It didn't seem like there was enough to support the charges. In January of 2017, Timothy B. Tyson published a book titled The Blood of Emmett Till. This is one of those moments in this case that really stand out. Timothy did something that no one else was able to do. He was able to get an interview with Carolyn Bryant. At the time, she was going by the name Carolyn Dunham, and she had divorced Roy years ago, married twice more. She said that the accusation that Emmett had verbally or physically assaulted her was not true. She said, "Nothing that boy did could ever justify what happened to him." Now, some say that's remorse. Others say, about damn time. And Yet many others would say, who gives a shit?
I'd probably fall in that latter one myself. She went along with it and even testified under oath. But then again, I don't care because it doesn't justify it. She thought it did at the time.
You know, that's something I've been asking people, that question. Does this matter? And I have expected people to say, well, it's not like she went to a public forum and said this. She said this in an interview for a book that was going to be published later. And she was of poor health. No, almost everyone I asked said her time to talk was a long time ago, meaning 1955.
Day late, dollar short. And this doesn't exonerate Emmett at all of any wrongdoing because he didn't do anything wrong in the first place.
And everyone pretty much knew that, except for people who had their heads in the sand or were just so racist they couldn't see straight. Now, Carolyn also wrote a memoir, but it was placed in the University of North Carolina archives and is not to be opened and read until 2036.
Oh, because she's going to be gone herself, so therefore she can admit guilt, admit her hand in all of this and not suffer any repercussions.
Maybe. Maybe. But this for me was a big moment because we didn't live in 1955. All we have are the articles we can read, the books we can read. We weren't there. But what we know of what was going on at the time was if you were black, it was a nightmare. Yeah. You weren't accepted as a fellow human being at the time.
No, I mean, everyone remembers the music and the fashion and the cars and they like all that, but that's just the aesthetic. Once you dug down deep, this was the reality.
Emmett Till was murdered because he was being made an example, right?
Yeah. How dare a black person show any sort of disrespect or any sort of joke to a white person?
Or an interest.
Yeah. How dare you? That's their whole thing. And, then they will do everything in their power to justify it after the fact, whether it be mischaracterizing their age, whether it be showing what a dangerous person they are, just complete character assassination. And then even after it's all said and done, they were saying, oh, well, he wasn't even victimized. Just complete denial that a crime even was committed.
I want to bring up Juneteenth. Juneteenth is only recognized in 37 of the states of the United States as a holiday, but it is to celebrate the end of slavery. Now, when the slaves were first emancipated, it's not as though everyone checked their smartphones and said, oh, the slaves are free now. The horrific part about this is that slave owners chose not to tell their slaves that they were free. They would work them until the slaves found out. And then it wasn't as though the slaves could then just go start a new life. They couldn't.
No.
In fact, they were encouraged to stay with their slave owners who now had to pay them a wage, not a good wage, because they couldn't just have all these slaves running loose. Any slaves that attempted to leave were likely shot and killed.
Yeah, because there were laws, there were curfew laws, there were public indecency laws, and just by being black, you could break any of these laws by just existing.
Now, a lot of this is because the slave owners and other people didn't view blacks as humans. They were property. The same way that the emancipation of the slaves wasn't a smooth operation, it wasn't what we would like to think it to be. The same thing with Emmett Till. They knew what happened. They knew that Roy and J.W. had murdered Emmett Till. But that wasn't the point. The point was, this is the way they want their society to be, and they didn't want it changing or progressing. They wanted to keep people like Emmett Till down. He didn't have the right to whistle at a white woman, whatever the context. So Juneteenth, this is something that's celebrated throughout the month of June, mostly in the South, but I've talk to some people who celebrate it in other parts of the country as well. But you said earlier how Mamie having an open casket, it was important. things like this would get brushed under a rug. And when people aren't forced to confront things, they can keep their heads in the clouds.
Or in the sand, whichever one.
Yeah. But because Mamie made that decision, and if you look at the photograph of her bending over her son's casket, you can see the tears on her face. This is heavy grief. She made the decision, and now all these years later, we can continue to look back and see the horror that was 1955, all because the government was okay with a boy being lynched by a white mob.
So Juneteenth isn't a federal holiday. Wow. I mean, I would just assume that that's a pretty important day in our history, yet it's not taken that seriously. You might think, well, who cares? You know, we have enough federal holidays. Why do we need to keep raising awareness for all of this? Well, Emmett Till has a, I think it's like a memorial plaque or a sign down in Mississippi that's been vandalized over and over again, riddled with bullets, has to be replaced all the time. There's actually a, I think, a separate fund just dedicated to upkeeping Emmett Till's memorial. Wow. Maybe we do need another federal holiday.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.